It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Now this is an exciting episode. You know why?
Why?
You know how I have my little thing in here that tells me what I want to talk about?
Yes.
It's blank.
What? I find that hard to believe.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
haven't watched any movies. We're still finishing up Devil's Hour, which still I can't recommend. Did I say we had finished? I just talked to you 3 days ago. The last for the rest of you, this is one of those weird times where like it's been a week for you all, but it's been 3 days for us. Usually it's either the same day or it's like several weeks away. But this one, we most recently have recorded like 3 days ago. But had I finished Man on the Inside when I talked to you last?
No, I don't think you'd finished it.
We probably finished it that night. It's good. I liked it. And it's apparently getting a second season, which I also like. It is a very good... Here's the problem, though. It's a very good ensemble show. And the way they did the little drop for there going to be a second season... I don't want to like spoil anything or whatever, but it seemed to imply that most of the ensemble won't be there. Like the second season will probably be at a new location. So just like Ted Danson and maybe the detective will be there and that's it, which is disappointing. I was hoping it was going to be focused on this retirement community because it's such a fun sort of group and really became an ensemble show. And maybe it still will. Maybe they'll find a way to work that in. But I'll definitely watch it. I was very excited about that. But yeah, I got another one.
Cool.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world where we got nothing. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 722.
And we don't have nothing, actually. We have developed a small collection of emails, several of which are anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
So it appears that... our listeners came out in force to support us in hiding Beth.
What?
That's what did. Remember, you outed Beth on a question.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And it was anonymous. And so we talked about that. And so we said we would work that out. And we have, by the way, Beth's email situation already happened. You guys didn't even notice. But in a fun twist, people have stepped up and been like, well, here's some anonymous ones to hide it. So we got some anonymous, which I think is good. Like, you don't – maybe you want to email us about something that you don't necessarily want to be known for emailing us about.
No.
And that's fine.
Yep.
I think anonymous can be very handy for that. Mm-hmm. I keep thinking I'm going to send in stuff. But I don't have anything I want to know from myself or you. So, I mean, I already know how I feel about things, and I don't care how you feel about things. So.
Right.
You took a while texting me back today to confirm we were recording. I thought I might need to just send you a little poke, and I was going to talk about how I was assuming you were dead, and I was now going to start on the huge list of alternate hosts that I had been curating over the years.
Oh.
Make some phone calls. But why then you texted back, so I didn't have the chance to make that joke.
Why do you have to wait for me to be dead? I mean, I know you'd much rather be doing this with someone else.
It seemed polite.
Oh, polite.
And I am nothing if not polite.
Yeah, I mean, that's what everybody says about you.
determining factor. Polite, and then after that, fat, hairy, evil, has a cool chair, big juicy hog. Sorry, I stole that one from someone else. That joke is beneath me, but I did. That's because I stole it from somebody else. It made me laugh. You have a look on your face like you are having a thought
about your chair.
I'm skeptical, but yes.
My chair is awesome. Do you think the chair enhances the evil? Because when you said evil and then chair, I thought, I wonder if the chair kind of enhances the evil. I mean, it's not a very evil color, I have to admit, but it does give you a vibe. Like I half expect, you know, like now when Ezzy's there and you're petting her, it seems like evil mastermind petting her.
Definitely think aesthetically it does. This is definitely more of a throne.
Yeah. And then you got your books back there and you've got your black thing on. It's like, yeah, this, okay, I get it.
But via like osmosis, do I get more evil particles off of the chair? Nothing like that.
Do you? Does it amplify your evil particles?
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't think it does. I think artistically, aesthetically, it's very good for the evil.
Yeah. I agree.
Back when David Mitchell and Robert Webb had their sketch comedy shows, David Mitchell had a recurring character that was like an evil Bond villain. But they had a whole bit where he was like setting up his lair and he wanted the trapdoors under all of the things and like tiger, and the workman guy was telling him like what he could or couldn't do up to code, and like you can't do that because that's a load-bearing wall and just health and safety won't allow this. And then later in that same episode we cut to a thing where he was telling all of his hench people about what the plans were, and he's like, so if any of you have qualms you should speak now, and one of them was like, yeah, this is unconscionable, I can't do this, I'm gonna leave. He's like, all right. And then he has to like hit this button and like a big safety guard thing comes down and there's a rotating light and it's like, warning, trap door imminent. and the guy's like, is there a trap door? He's like, no, it's fine. We should talk a little bit about where do you want your severance sent? And eventually he leaves just after it opens up. So. Made me think of that. Those guys are funny.
That's good.
Sometimes there's a, on YouTube, there's collections of like entire seasons of Mitchell and Webb stuff. And every once in a while, after it's been a while, I'll pull up one of those and just, that'll be my little bite-sized things.
Aren't they the ones that did the sketch where one Nazi asked another, do you think we're the baddies?
Yes. Are we the baddies? Yeah. Their most famous ones are the Nazis and Are We the Baddies, their skulls on our helmets, and homeopathic A&E, which is the equivalent of homeopathic ER in the U.S., which is also really hilarious. As somebody who angrily hates homeopathy, I found it hilarious. And I think we have discussed this before, but if for some reason we haven't and you are listening and you are hearing that I hate homeopathy and think I'm saying that I hate alternative medicine, no. Homeopathy is a very specific thing with a very specific history that has very specific principles that are bullshit. Look it up. I am not saying alternative medicines in general are bad or non-Western medicines, no. Homeopathy specifically is essentially belief that if you put a little bit of poison in a swimming pool of water, it will cure your poison. And the bigger the swimming pool, the better the cure. And that is nonsense. So keep in mind, anytime you see a homeopathic remedy, it's water. I mean, it is functionally, chemically, water. So
yeah, there's not
you
even
know about supposed, this shit, right?
Yeah, there's not even supposed to be any of the activating agent left.
No.
There's and supposedly the more some you dilute essence it, of it left. Yeah.
Yeah, the three principles. I'm trying to remember the three. One is that light cures like. Mm-hmm. So if something poisoned you, that thing will also be what cures you. And then the big one is the dilution thing. The idea that if you dilute something in water, the more you dilute it, the more powerful it gets, which is just on its face cuckoo bananas. Like, that's not only that, that's wicked dumb. Like, that's
I don't know when I was in college when I was first exposed to that, and I thought, how does someone even come up with this, honestly? And I'm not trying to insult people who believe in it or anything like that. I truly do not get
Someone comes up with it is it was a wealthy landowning white guy in like the 18th century.
They came up
with all sorts of crazy crap. Like, there's a specific guy who invented homeopathy, and he's an old guy.
As a scam, do you think?
No. He believed in it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was old enough that people would still. It was far back enough that people could come to those insane conclusions on their own without the internet. Okay. There was a period between then and the internet where it was hard to come to those insane conclusions on your own.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're back to where it's super easy because you can definitely find a community of people who will convince you.
Okay.
For those of you just joining us, we have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People, sometimes anonymous people, write into that email, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want, really. And the hat magically forwards those emails to us and makes us read them on the air and talk about them, unless we don't want to. So there we are. So how's your 3 days been?
Well, we rewatched the first season of Severance in anticipation of watching a new season. Yeah, it was really rewatchable, especially when it's one of those things that you might not notice certain things the first time through. So,
but once you know what's going on, you can see. Yeah, I think we may end up doing that. I mean, we're very excited for the second season. And Trish has said she thinks she wants to rewatch it. And I'm like, it's 9 hours. But yeah, probably. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really enjoyed watching it. Other than that.
It cracks me up. So Adam Scott is on that show.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam Scott is primarily a comedic actor.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of cut his teeth in Party Down, which was a cult favorite on HBO, I think. And of course, Parks and Rec really put him on the map, and he shows up in other places, and he's a good comedic actor. He's occasionally a good dramatic actor. Well, I mean, he is. He's a great dramatic actor, but he occasionally gets the opportunity.
Uh-huh.
I recently discovered he was a major character in, and was very young at the time, in the fourth Hellraiser movie.
Oh, well, I didn't know that.
Why would you? Why would anybody? Why the hell is he there? It's crazy. He was clearly too young to just do whatever, but like it's, and he's got long hair that like sometimes is in a ponytail. Like it's hilarious. He's a bad guy essentially, but it's really funny to watch because I'm like, that's Adam Scott.
Well, I wasn't much of a fan of his comedic work. I didn't feel like he even added very much to Parks and Rec, but I feel like in this, he's super good. Really good.
I'm a very big fan of
Fair enough.
I will admit it took some time for me to get into his character. In the beginning, his character was just a straight man in Parks and Rec, but he did eventually. So a lot of Parks and Rec is about things growing. The first season, the initial appearance of a lot of characters and stuff, but you got to kind of push through, and then it. They were really good at growing the characters, growing the relationships, growing the dynamics. And that's,
that's a good point. You're right. As time went on, he definitely got better, but it wasn't just him. Obviously it was like the writers and the dynamics between the characters and everything.
Well, and it's weird because of course a lot of people already knew, because again, Party Down, the people who liked Party Down really liked Party Down. And I think he was a very different character in that.
Mm.
So for me, it was the first time I'd ever seen this dude, but
yeah, I'd never seen him before Parks and Rec.
He was in that Krampus movie. And he was actually in a movie where he's the stepson of the Antichrist. That's pretty good. It's called Little Evil.
Yeah, Little Evil. I actually did like him in the Krampus movie. I actually did like
him. I mean, for what it was, it wasn't like it was a difficult movie to perform. But
no, but I mean, like, I know people who watch that every year. We don't, but we could, because it's not, I mean,
I can see doing that. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Like, that Christmas movies are generally like that, where it's not so much that they're good, it's just that it's Christmas time and this is a theme. And
yeah,
and I have to admit, he is a major reason to watch it, because he is good in it, I think. So I don't know, we might start watching that every year because it's fun.
It is a good one. I am playing more Baldur's Gate 3.
Oh. We probably
will. And it's making me angry.
Angry? Why?
Well, for starters, it's too damn hard for me. I'm not doing well.
Oh, it's hard.
I think I'm going to set the difficulty down to easy. I don't know what I'm doing. Oh. Clearly. I'm especially mad because I basically ended up fucking something up. So I had to reload last night. Mm. And the reload was from like an hour previous. And most of that hour I had spent managing inventory, like selling shit and buying new shit and all, and moving things around. And then when I tried to do it again, my initial rolls didn't go as well. So everything went to shit in a new way. And I just turned off. I'm like, oh, I'll deal with this tomorrow or whatever. But I think I'm going to change the difficulty. Maybe I'm just not good at D&D in a tactical sense. I just feel like I'm doing, but it's also, again, it's one of these things, it's open in such a way that it triggers my anxiety.
Mm.
Like, with a lot of games, video games, you know how it's supposed to go. You know the words. You know when the guy whose eyes keep rolling back in his head and he keeps hand washing his own hands dry and says, yeah, I just need you to go get me a box. Like, it's a bad guy, it's a bad box. But like, it's not that clear in this game. I mean, it would be if we saw that guy, he'd be bad, but like, any decision, any conversation, any movement you make, you have no idea where it's gonna go. And that's cool in a lot of ways. That's a neat thing about a video game. But for somebody with my brain, it stresses me out a lot. And the few little things I know, like some of them I want to happen and some of them I don't, but I don't know how they happen or don't happen. So I'm like, oh, I think this is related to this. So then I try and do it and I'm like, oh, wait, is this right? And I don't know. Also, I think I've got all the characters now.
All like the companions or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, wait. I think I'm probably going to get a druid.
Oh.
I don't have the druid yet, but we're going to look for a druid, and I know you can have sex with a bear, so there must be a druid in this game.
Okay.
Because it would be terribly inappropriate to have sex with an actual bear. That's, animals can't consent. It's a whole deal. That's why it's illegal. Don't do it. But if it's a druid, and that's your thing, you know, go nuts. Or it was just a big hairy gay guy. If it's a bear in that sense, that's also fine. But anyway, so I think I have that one left. So presumably, okay, the druid can heal. But other than the druid, we've got one healer.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really not built to heal. Like, they can heal,
mm-hmm.
but it's a cleric, but it's a cleric of a domain that's not about that. And so it's hard. Like, I don't have a lot of healing options in a fight.
Mm.
And I picked a bard because I wanted to pick somebody who was very persuasive and that kind of thing, because I figured that was a good deal. And now I'm like, oh man, if I had picked like a freaking cleric or something. So yeah, I have a really hard time in a lot of these fights. I'm not very good. I'm not good at tactics or whatever. A lot of times I'm like, shoot it or stab it until it's dead. And that is sometimes a very bad tactic.
Mm.
So we'll have to see. But yeah, I did finally find there was a companion that was apparent, according to my sister-in-law, who has played the shit out of this game, is near a different one I found. So I've been going about looking, and I finally found where he was. So I got the wizard now. But it's not real clear how to get the wizard. And also I know from other people who played, you can't leave this map until you found them all.
Oh, didn't know that. We haven't gotten that far.
Yeah, you cannot move on, because I had a friend who covered the whole map and the game wouldn't let him move on. And he was like, what the hell? And he wandered around forever and then he finally found one more character. So,
that sounds maddening.
Yeah, no, it would be crazy. Well, and this was my thing with Gale too, that the wizard, that's the one I had to get. She told me it was near someone else, so I went back there and I'm just like, he's not here. It's not. And I'm like, how long ago has she done? How does she define near? Also, it's one of those games that does not make it clear if you are at the right sort of power level for taking on a quest.
Yep.
Once you're in a fight, you can see what level they are.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, what am I
and
doing?
And then you're like, shit! And actually, I had one fight where the game gave me a tutorial tip that said, sometimes you're outmatched. It's okay to run away.
Yeah, right.
And guess what? I was outmatched. They did it as soon as the fight started. And I was like, okay, apparently I'm not. But like, I think it's what I'm supposed to be doing. So I feel like I'm somehow underleveled, even though I'm fighting everything and doing all the things. And I don't know. And I've only finally found there, at least on this map, there is a supreme lack of people who will buy your shit. So constantly I've got too much shit. I figured out I can put my camp supplies in the chest in the camp. And that helped a lot for weight and shit like this. But I finally found somebody who could sell like all the tons of daggers I had picked up and shit like that. But of course, then I fucked up. So I'm going to have to do all that over again. But all right. Do you ever watch The Rig on Amazon?
No, I see ads for it sometimes, but no, I haven't watched it.
I think I'm going to try it. My mother recommended it. And apparently she's recommended it to the other children. And my sister and her husband liked it. And my brother and his wife did not like it. And I don't know what that means in terms of whether or not I'll like it.
No.
I'm very curious. I'm like, I don't know what this Venn diagram looks like exactly.
Right.
Like, I'm not sure. But so I think I'm going to give it a shot. It looks interesting. It is a oil rig in the middle of the ocean, and then weird, spooky, supernatural shit happens, and they're trapped there, and it's just a big mystery. And that's the problem, is it seems like it's a big mystery that may not have a lot of answers. And also, based on the trailer, it's a lot of people freaking out because they're trapped and turning on each other and shit. And I'm like, I don't care about that. But neither do my sister and her husband. So maybe that's fine. And I don't think my brother and his wife have issues with that like I do. But they didn't like it. So I'm like, I don't know what to expect. But I think I'll check it out. We'll see. All right. We should do some emails.
Okay.
We have Dems.
We do. I don't.
Oh, and speaking of, we have learned, for those of you who don't go to the blog, first of all, shame on you. Go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com, so you can talk to us. Or at least me. William hates you. Agitalin pointed out that he does not send in his weird-ass fucked-up memes because he thinks we'll like them. He sends it because he thinks they will make for interesting conversation, and I think he's right. So keep doing what you do, Agitalin. I'm still going to shit all over you for it, but it probably helps our brand. All right, sorry. Go ahead with your email, self.
Okay. I was going to say something, but now I'm not going to. All right, this is anonymous. As you said, we got a couple anonymous people here.
Don't read the signature at the end, then.
I won't. Do you have siblings, in-laws, or your spouse's siblings? A spouse's sibling spouse, I think. With whom you disagree ideologically.
No. Do your wife's husband, do you disagree with him ideologically?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting. That's what I'm getting that's being asked here. What's your wife's husband? What's your and your spouse's approach to interacting with them?
I mean, my wife's husband and I do not get along at all. That dude's an asshole. This is fun watching your wheels turn. Either you didn't get the joke or you're just not even paying attention because you're thinking about the email. I can't tell what it is.
That's the one. I didn't hear what you said, really. I was kind of trying to think of...
I was saying I don't agree with my wife's husband on anything. That dude is an asshole.
Oh, your wife's... Well, that's understandable. That's a pretty common complaint.
All right, let's hit all the... See, it's interesting, and you may not... I don't know how involved you guys are with Abby's family, so it may be less of an issue for you. This has come up a lot over the years, but what is interesting is I have been married into this family for so long now, it's evolved over time. Both my relationship with these individuals and therefore my feelings on various things, but also in some cases, my in-laws' views and my views have changed over time, where there were issues that we didn't agree on that now we come closer to agree on. The best example is my wife's sister and her husband in particular. They were Assembly of God people, very devoted, very proselytizing, evangelical, the whole bit. His dad's a minister, and his dad was a minister at that church, and he was the youth minister and all this stuff. And I mean, we definitely have a whole bunch of stuff we don't agree there. And politically, he has historically been, they have historically been more right wing than me. That has been changing, I think, largely because of their children. Because their children are finally older and are expressing their own views about things and are, for example, coming out as queer and things like this. And so they're having to face, like your beliefs on this issue now have a face that you love. And so I think it has caused them to sort of have to adjust certain things. There's also been issues related to gun rights and gun control that we used to very much disagree on, that we still kind of disagree on, but a lot less than we used to. And I have this a little bit with my sister's brother as well. I don't see him as often, but I get that from him. My sister's husband, no, we're pretty much on the same page and stuff. My brother's wife, yeah, again, same page on things. My youngest sister-in-law, we're good friends. The other sister-in-law, yeah, I mean, she's married to the other one, but I don't know. I feel like her views have always been a little different, and she's also less talkative about, I think, her views. She's less interested in sort of that debate. So I kind of know her views, but it doesn't come up a lot per se for us. But yeah, I definitely have some, but it's been interesting to see it change over the years. Not only our relationship, but our views on things and where they match more than they used to and stuff. What about you, Dork?
Well, I come from a culture that sort of avoids talking about religion and politics as a matter of course. It's not forbidden. It's just, it has to be a fairly unique circumstance for it to be okay for you to talk about those things regardless. That said, I also recall growing up and people where the occasion where it was appropriate to talk about these things would be talked about, and people had some pretty deep disagreements, but it was fine. They just talked about it. They didn't even fight about it. And they certainly didn't have any problems being friends or relatives with each other. So I come from a place where, on one hand, it's not actually common to talk about such things with anybody, just at all. It's not about, oh, we disagree ideologically, or you just don't talk about those things except for specific circumstances. And then when those specific circumstances were there and I was watching people talk about these things, they weren't really fraught conversations. So they weren't, they didn't avoid the conversations because they thought they would be fraught. It was just, I don't really know why, actually, because whenever they talked about him, it seemed fine. Maybe just because it could be fraught. Maybe, I don't know. It was just like being really cautious. So, but then when I moved here and I experienced a lot of people who do have, I mean, there were a lot of, you know, I came to college and there were fraught conversations all over the place and people who just would walk away from each other in a huff. Friendships were breaking. I mean, that's not really a new thing. I mean, I don't know if it's worse now than it was, but it's not a new thing. People have been doing that for a long time, but I didn't first experience that until I got here. But my ideology, if you can call it that, is I don't agree with anybody ideologically. So I don't really
That's true. You're pretty fucked up.
Yeah. I don't really think of anybody in my family as any one person as being more ideologically different from me than, you know, everybody's ideologically different from me. And so when we get together, and most of us are from that same culture where you don't really talk about these things. We don't really talk about those things unless it's appropriate for us to. And then when we do, it goes well. I mean, there's no fraught interactions or anything like that. I mean, it's the reason I'm saying all this is because I'm not sure that the premise of the question fits in with my personal experience, because I really didn't run into serious ideological conflicts till I came here. And even then, my ideology was different than everybody else's. I don't care who they were, left, right, whatever. So I've never had to sit down with Abby and say, how are we going to deal with so-and-so this year or whatever, or during this election period, or when we see that. I've never, ever had to do that. It's just, things just take care of themselves. We don't. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I disagree with people, obviously, and they strenuously disagree with me, but it just doesn't seem to be an issue. And I don't know. Obviously, I've had to adapt things and change things to make that work, but it was never this explicit process that I could sit and describe to you. It's just kind of how it was. It's, you know what I mean? Does that make any sense? I can't break it down really. It's just how it had to be. And so
I mean, that's kind of, we definitely left, you haven't even mentioned a single in-law. So we definitely left the scope of what we're doing.
Well,
I suspect that maybe because you don't want any identifying characteristics, because you don't want to talk about any specific individuals without their permission.
Well, but it's because I don't have anything to talk about in regard to them. I would just be running through people I know saying, I don't have an issue there. I don't have an issue there. I don't have an issue there. I mean, what's really to say?
All right. So in your family, you don't agree with anybody ideologically, but also no one stands out as especially being different from you.
No,
they're all sort of equally ideologically opposed to you.
Maybe one direction or the other. I suppose there are some people who are closer to my way of thinking than other people, I suppose.
Or people who are more inclined to want to argue with you. You don't have any of those in your family?
Look, when you are an anarchist and you describe yourself that way to everybody, even if you looking at that person say, you're actually closer to my way of thinking than that person over there, they all are sure they're far away from your way of thinking, right? It doesn't matter if I think this person's closer to my way of thinking than that person. They all think they are completely night and day to me, which they're not. Right. None of them are. But
So what I'm hearing is every person you encounter, especially everybody in your family, violently opposes all of your beliefs, and you've just learned to be zen about it and not care.
Not violently, but
aggressively.
Well, it's this is all relatively speaking, right? I mean, like in my family, in my family, there are no.
That was your joke. You didn't even give it a chance to breathe.
There are no huge chasms. So a small difference is a big difference to us, if that makes any sense, but not like fight over it difference, just a, well, maybe we can agree to disagree difference. And so then we don't talk about it, right? No hard feelings. There's nothing wrong there, but that's what a big difference is in our family, but nobody else would say they're an anarchist. But they would look at me saying that and they'd go, yeah, that tracks. Bill saying he's an anarchist. Of course he is. He was also a Seventh-day Adventist. None of us were ever that. He always does everything. He never does anything halfway. He always just goes clear off.
Anarchic Seventh-day Adventist.
Yeah. He always goes way off the map. And so, of course, I mean, they just expect that I'm going to be that way. I sometimes wonder if they think I do it. I don't know. Like, I'm not completely sincere. Like, I do it because... Oh, I'm just going to go off the map because that's what I do.
Do-ka-do-ka-do.
Yeah.
I've always assumed that you just want to seem like an edgelord.
No, which isn't, but I mean, I think they, no, that's not true actually, but I think sometimes they kind of wonder because I'm so consistently doing it. And they don't, you know, they're not like angry with me or whatever. It's just, it's kind of it's almost a black sheep of the family kind of thing, but not really. I don't know how to describe it, but the upshot of it is in relation to this question is it's not like I'm just who I am and they are who they are. We'll talk about things sometimes and we do have things we agree on and we'll talk about those things. When we disagree about something, we'll talk about that. No big deal. Agree to disagree. A lot of times that's said a lot in some conversations, but it's not, there's no strategy or tactic. And Abby feels that way about my family in-laws, and I feel that way about her family too. It's just, I don't know. I feel bad when we have questions like this and I don't feel like I know how to answer it. But yeah, that's how it is.
I mean, I feel like you're trying too hard to answer it and miss, like, I don't, you could just talk about your in-laws individually and if there are particular things they disagree on and we'll take it as read now that you guys don't fight over it, which I don't think is what the email asked.
No, I know.
It just
know.
Asked if there were family members and you could definitely get a little more specific. I understand that what you're saying is everybody disagrees with me, but presumably they don't all disagree with you in exactly the same way.
No, that's true.
So you could, like I said, as I did, like I get along with my brother-in-law just fine, but I discussed the ways in which our beliefs differ.
So well, but I don't know if I could pick things out. I don't, well, except I don't know if I could pick specific things out like you did. Not really. Because, you know, my views, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It feels complicated, but maybe it's not. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm making it more complicated than it really is.
Everything feels complicated to you. I'm confident Abby has said to you before, what do you want for lunch? And you're like, I don't know how to answer this question. I'm confident that it's happened at least once.
God. I don't know.
But maybe somebody write that. Somebody email that in. What do you want for lunch? I think you've got a good situation, and I think you've got two fairly respectful families, it sounds like, which helps. What you're describing is an ideal. That's what I want. I think that's what most of us want, is to just be able to talk about it. You run into two issues with this. I guess one's a bigger sociological issue. I'll talk about the interpersonal one specifically. Sometimes when two people have a socio-political difference of opinion or a religious difference of opinion, one party believes the other one is doing literal evil, and or believes that the other person, who they may love and care about very much, is going to be eternally tormented for their beliefs and actions.
Sure, yeah.
And as somebody who has never felt that way, if I believed in hell and I believed that the vast majority of people I knew were going to hell unless they changed their ways, I would be spending all of my time plotting how to trick everyone into doing the thing they need to do not to go to hell. But I don't want to say I would be the most evangelical, because I think evangelism is ineffective. I wouldn't be like, I need to spread the word. I'd be like, no, what manipulation, deception, trick, plan can I use to get them to believe this way, because their eternal life is on the line? Like, to me, that is such a huge thing that while I don't agree with any of those people, it does not surprise me that they get real emotional about it. Because I can't even imagine the idea. If I believed that you and Abby and Trish and my friends and pretty much my entire family on my side of the family were going to be tormented for eternity, what wouldn't I do?
Yeah.
Like, when I think about it that way, I'm like, evangelical Christians are actually pretty awful in that they're not trying hard enough.
That doesn't seem like they're taking it very seriously.
I don't think I could live thinking, oh, most of these people for eternity going to be tormented. That's crazy. And to put it in a little less speculative fiction way, but only a little. Also, there can be political discussions where people disagree and one person thinks that the other one's beliefs are genuinely going to lead to the fall of society or promote genocide or like do terrible things. And it's hard to not be invested in that. And it doesn't help if we're having a debate about a political thing. It doesn't help if I get mad. Certainly doesn't help if I say, well, then fuck you. Like, that doesn't help anything. But I think that is a problem. That is why a lot of people can't achieve what you seem to have achieved, is because you run into this thing. Hopefully none of your family members think you're going to hell. Because if they do, they should be trying way harder to help.
Well, maybe the term I'm getting tripped up on is ideology, right? I don't know. I said everyone's ideology is different than mine, and I didn't feel really comfortable saying that because I'm not sure I think of my positions as particularly ideological. I mean, there are different ways to define that term, right? And if you turn it the lightest way, it's like, well, you've got certain belief systems and a certain way you do things, and that's your ideology. Fair enough. But if you define it as a thing that's like a fairly strict worldview that makes it hard for you to get along with people that are a different worldview. No, but none of my family on either side, none of my in-laws or anything are ideological like that. Like, they're not, they're just not that, they're not ideological in that sense. So there's not
you
really
answered the email.
They're not
your
really.
Your answer is no.
Well, I guess, but.
Good job.
That feels like we just don't plan for it or think about it. I'm trying to argue, I guess, that there's not anything to plan for or to think about. Not really.
I mean, it happens. On my side of the family, nobody. I mean, we have minor ones that we will debate or whatever. But in general, I would say we have mostly the same sociopolitical opinions on things. On my side of the family. If I'm talking brother, sister, mom, dad, and associated spouses and children, we all religiously, at least at this point, I guess most of my family's probably agnostic, whereas I'm atheist, but I mean, you know, whatever. Politically, we are largely in the same spectrum. I think I am probably more left-leaning. It's the whole liberal versus progressive thing a little bit, but like, I haven't got any hardcore right-wingers or Trump supporters or gun nuts. And actually, I don't know for sure, and we don't talk about it in a lot of detail, but I am pretty confident no one in either side of my family, again, in the immediate family on both sides, ever voted for Trump. So I like that. But the other thing this made me think of, and I'm not sure this is, like I said, this is a larger sort of issue when it comes to social policy and things like that. But I love this idea of, like, we shouldn't fight and we should be civil about it. Makes sense to a degree. Civil discussion can sometimes be used as a tool to avoid change. And sometimes people are willing to talk about things indefinitely, because as long as we're talking, we don't have to do anything. And that's when you get people who, like, the great example I have is every single Black Lives Matter protest. Those were not civil. Those were not polite. And it was necessary, because the issue that caused that organization is discussing, is talking about, is forwarding here, has been going on forever, and we've been talking about it forever, and nothing has happened. To put it back to the context, nothing's changing about health care and health care reform in this country, and nobody listened, so finally somebody shot somebody over it. And I'm not saying that was the right thing to do, but I can absolutely understand the position of nothing's going to change unless I get, as long as we're all just willing to have polite conversation, there is no impetus for anybody to change their comfortable situation. And so I watch out for that sometimes. But when it comes to a family or a household or whatever, like, none of us are doing it. None of us are making policy. So in our situation, you know, being civil is probably for the best. And I like it better. I don't like fighting.
I do not think that polite conversation is preventing anything from happening. I think other things are preventing things from happening.
Oh,
so okay. I don't understand a violent response like that at all, not on any level. But I think you're right. I think that
doesn't necessarily have to be violent. Every once in a while, somebody says something in the House or the Senate that is rude or aggressive, and a bunch of people are like, what happened to civil discourse and all this? And I'm like, because you've been doing civil discourse and it hasn't done shit.
Yeah, but I don't know if I would call what they've been doing civil discourse. I mean, to say, well, we need, you know, it's the very typical thing of, well, we need to think about this more. We need to talk about this more. This needs to be in committee more. And yes, there comes a time where that's just obfuscation. That's what that is. And there's nothing polite about that. So I don't consider that. I think there are specific things we can point to that cause things not to get done. And it's not because it's polite, it's not because it's like, well, let's talk about this civilly. No, that's not, the problem isn't that people are not talking about civilly. It's that they're clearly deliberately putting things off. And there are always good ways to address that. And we just have to do that. But like, you're to the point you were making about we're not making policy in these conversations. Yes, that's true. I think there's a, sometimes there's kind of level confusion, right? Like, we treat the uncle at our Thanksgiving who has a particular view as if they are the person who has the decide, you know, it can make the decisions.
Yeah, as if he's the Secretary of State.
Right. Now, granted, it's like, but even if we say, yeah, but they're supporting that person with a vote, right?
Well, and that was, I knew this is where you were headed. And I was just thinking in my head, I don't believe I can ever recall a political conversation with anyone that caused me to change my mind about a vote. I've had ones that have changed my mind about how I think about things. in a more general sense. But I can't ever think of a conversation where I walked in and I was going to vote for this person or I was going to vote against this, and then they said something that made me vote for it or vote for a different person. I don't think that's ever happened to me.
It's happened to me lots of times.
In the specific. The aggregate, I talk with people and I change my views and things evolve. But I can't ever think of like a specific conversation that made me change my part of it, which is, as you said, one vote.
Yeah. I've changed my mind. Like I could probably, if I sat here long enough, think of specific conversations I've had where I said I was going to vote one way and then I voted another, but I don't know if I count because I don't,
you don't, it's all humans are like this.
What I'm saying is I don't know anyone else besides, even I don't know anyone else besides myself who's willing to look at all 10 presidential people on the ballot and consider, oh, well, maybe that person, or maybe, I mean, and when you're that open-minded about who you're going to vote for president, yeah, you probably can be persuaded in the 11th hour to vote for somebody else. But most people are not going to pay attention to any of those people except the two. And usually they're already settled on the two before the primary starts. So, I mean, that you're right. That is very unusual for a person, I think, to have one conversation and change their whole vote for president, say.
Like, for an example, when it looked like it was going to be Trump Biden, I was going to vote third party.
Yeah, you did start talking about that a little bit.
Nobody, I decided that, and it wasn't based on a conversation I had with it.
Right.
Was it possibly based on some conversations I had? Absolutely. But
yeah. Well, I mean,
I found it gets weird. This is a fun ideological difference you can have. Personal opinions about people none of you know. I will give you an example. I think I really threw off my friends who are all very left-leaning or whatever when I said, well, now that he pardoned his son Hunter for, I guess you can do a presidential pardon for shit that may or may not have happened and shit that might happen in the future. Like, I didn't know the presidential pardon is really broad.
Yeah, apparently.
And now that I found out that he pardoned his son, who all evidence looks like was guilty of some shit, I'm like, I now think Joe Biden's pretty much a shithead. And I was like, this seems as shitty as something Trump would do. And all of my friends were like, oh my God, how can you say that? And on the one hand, I was very emotional about it, and so were they. On the other hand, none of us have fucking met Joe Biden. We don't know what kind of a dude he is. What the fuck? Celebrities in general, you get that. People will argue about their opinions on celebrities or opinions on like events that all we have is very limited information, but you'll get real intense about how it went down and shit like that. And that one's always weird because, yeah, we don't know these people. We imagine we know these people. Because we see them on the TV and the news talks about them, but we don't know these people. So it's weird to have a strong opinion about what kind of person they are. And I do it. I do it all the time. There are celebrities that I really, really like. And there are celebrities that I really, really hate. And it's not that they're good at whatever their art is or whatever. It's their personality. It's things that I have thought or heard or made up about them. And then I feel that way about them. I take comfort in the fact that I have no influence on them. So I can hate a movie star all I want. Doesn't matter for them, which is good. It's not, I shouldn't make it their problem. They don't know me. But that's one that I both am shocked happens and I still get caught up in a lot. This idea of arguing about people that none of us know.
Well, I mean, people have they get very, and I hate when people call this tribal, because this isn't tribal. This is something that happens in large scale systems. Large scale systems cause this. So it's Orwellian to call it tribal, but people pick a faction and they get very emotionally, and their identity gets caught up in it. And it starts not to really be about facts or reason or anything else, right? Like it, it wouldn't, let's just say for the sake of argument, I just want to say this for the sake of argument, not actually literally, factually, whatever, just for the sake of argument. Let's
William is about to state his most deeply held beliefs. Everyone get ready.
No, I'm going to reiterate something you said a second ago, that what Joe Biden did was just as bad as anything Trump would do. Well,
now I wouldn't say anything Trump would
do. No.
I didn't go that far.
Okay.
It felt like a very Trumpist thing.
Okay. That's what I meant to say.
Trumpy, a Trumpy thing.
That's what I meant to say. For people on Biden's side to refuse to see it that way or to be insulted to see it that way is not really so much about whether or not factually that's the case.
No, it's that I just called Joe Biden the devil. And well, they don't like that.
Yes. Yeah. And, but by extension, them. By them, they're calling them the devil.
They're devil worshipers or they voted for the devil.
Right, that's what I'm getting at. And I'm not saying that as a criticism. I'm not saying that as a criticism, by the way. I mean, when I said a second ago that I don't like when they call it tribal, I think they call it tribal to scandalize it. And I don't really scandalize it. I mean, if people feel this way about their political beliefs, I don't have any bigger problem with that as if how they feel about their religious beliefs or any other beliefs at all. But I think sometimes, and this is the problem I do have with people in their religious beliefs too, is when people start to take their opinions and their strongly held opinions, which they're perfectly entitled to, and I have no problem with at all, and start asserting them like they're facts. Like, no, God does exist, and you're an idiot if you don't believe it. Well, there are people who talk that way about their religion, and I don't think that's appropriate, but there are people who also talk that way about their politics, and I don't think it's appropriate. It's an opinion, and you're entitled to it, and I can even see where you get that opinion. But don't start acting like it's an absolute fact and everyone who doesn't think so is stupid or evil. That's not true. It's just not reality. And it doesn't do anything. It doesn't help anything. It's not going to get us closer to the world even that you want to see to be that way. So, I mean, that's how I feel about it anyway.
Says the social scientist in well deep irony. Dude, I don't disagree with you, but you do realize that literally every tenet of both sociology and anthropology do not count as facts. And yet you and I talk about them as though they are. No, there may be data to back them up that still makes it a theory and not provable and not a fact.
Right, but do you think we really assert them like they're facts?
I mean, you do. I think you constantly mention sociological facts as though it's a given.
Well, because I think there are some sociological facts.
And I think that's science. Literally by definition impossible.
Well, it depends on what sociology you're talking about, I suppose.
But I mean, the best you have is just data sets again. I mean, and it becomes, you know, scientific theory is the same thing. Technically, gravity is only a theory, and we call it a fact. And so there is that argument. But I'm just saying, we should be aware we are not immune from this condition.
Oh, yeah, I'm not immune from any condition.
Yeah, but I want you to be aware that you are specifically not immune from this one.
No, yeah, I know that. I'm not sure that I'm doing it when you think I'm doing it or say I'm doing it, but I'm sure I do it. Yes, because like you said, we all do.
Just every once in a while, your sociological bent gets to a point where you say something that to me really sounds like this is definitely true. And everybody who sees otherwise just doesn't understand. This is absolutely how it is all the time.
Okay,
you said things that almost in those words, like when you get into your, and I get it because again, it's your deal. But when you get into your sociology, you are super confident about it. And sometimes you even say things in a way that imply like these are essentially facts, maybe not technically, but they basically are. And it is spurious to even consider other options.
Oh, okay. You say
you get real intense on some of them.
Well, but and what I'm saying is I'm probably no, we don't have to get into that.
No. And I'm willing to believe that. It's likely, but again, there's this sense, I know you when you're giving an opinion and when you're giving something that you believe to be actually factually true. I know the difference. And sometimes you do.
Okay.
But in the going back to the example of Biden and all that, I also created that situation because I specifically used the word shithead. What I should have said if I was being like fair and whatever is say, I don't like that he did that. I consider it unethical. And I do not approve of that. And I wish he hadn't done that. And I even wish he hadn't been able to do that. I think my friends would have been like, yeah, it was kind of rough. But instead I said, he's a shithead and it's a very Trump-like thing. And they were like, ah! So I did it to myself. And I do it to myself all the time. I've probably done it to myself right here. I think you've already checked out of this and you're thinking about what I said and how much you disagree already because I was so vociferous in my
opinion. I'm done thinking about it. This isn't the first time you and I have had this type of situation. And I know there's no point.
Absolutely.
I know there's no point in me talking about it past a certain point. So I'm just not going to.
And it may be in my head. You carry yourself as someone who has supreme self-knowledge.
I don't.
And but you talk as someone who does.
Well, maybe some people think I do.
All right. Well, I'll put it this way.
I can only take so much responsibility for how I'm taken. And you know I take huge responsibility.
No, absolutely.
For
absolutely.
Lots of
what
responsibility
I will say
for
is this. I don't ever recall hearing you say, I feel this way and I don't know why. I'll put it that
really?
Way.
Really?
Yeah, never.
I'm pretty sure I've said things like that on the podcast, but maybe not.
If he has, people find it for us and let me know. But I don't recall you saying. But my point was, that's how I perceive you.
Yeah.
Maybe it's true, but also maybe it's not true. And I am... feel like maybe essentially I am jealous of you because I think you look that way and I wish I was that way. And consequently, I need to tear you down.
I don't know.
All right. Sorry. All right. Let's just finish up here. Let's do our side quest. You want to draw?
Yes.
All right.
There we go.
Okay. Purge a little space junk. Sell or donate something you don't use anymore. And...
Oh.
Quote on the bottom is Trace, which sounded like Strong Bad, but was in fact Yoda. I don't have a good Yoda impression.
Nobody would buy anything that I have. I can't think of a single thing I have that anyone would buy.
Our house is full of shit that needs to be given to Goodwill. And actually, now that the holidays are over, I need to get back on that. No, I'm serious.
I think Goodwill would take my stuff and throw it away. I think is what would happen. I don't think I have anything anyone wants.
Well, now you got a job. Maybe you can buy shit people want and then donate it to them.
Yeah, that's what I'll do.
Please email us, themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com with whatever you want. And if you want it to be anonymous, just say up front in the like subject line, this is anonymous, and it'll be anonymous. Also, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com, and tell us your views on whatever we just talked about. And then also listen again next week. All right? I can't hear you, listeners. I need a verbal confirmation that you're going to listen next week. Thank you.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.